Randy, we really appreciate you coming to this event today. We know that this week is Virginia Aviation Safety Week, and we do appreciate you taking the time to come up here. Thank you. Our next speaker is probably well known to all of you, but he's a pilot. He holds academic degrees from the University of Kansas, Tulane University Law School, Georgetown University Law Center. So he's a good Hoya for any Hoyas that are in town here. He was a legislative director for a U.S. Senator, majority general counsel for the Senate Committee on Labor and Human Resources. He also serves on five different aviation boards. He was appointed by the President of the United States to serve as the chairman of the FAA's Management Advisory Council. And prior to joining NBAA, he was the president and CEO of the General Aviation Manufacturers Association. And believe me, folks, we are lucky to have this gentleman. Our NBAA president and CEO since September of 2004, Ed Bolin. Ed.
Well, thanks, Terry, and welcome, everybody. I appreciate everybody being here for what I hope will be a really rewarding, worthwhile day for everyone. I want to take just a moment to recognize again Randy Burdett and just say I think Randy was being a little modest in his remarks because he talked about the state of Virginia working to be the kind of state that others try to benchmark against. And the fact is, a lot of states are already benchmarking against Virginia because you do a superb job. And we're delighted with our relationship there. Also, of course, want to echo Harry's comments, thanking our sponsors for making today possible. We're really grateful for the warmth and hospitality and strong support we get from everybody. I also want to recognize Harry. Harry mentioned in his opening remarks that he was our Southeast Region rep. Some of you know that NBAA has a regional rep program. We have five, hopefully we'll be moving to six individuals who cover a multi-state area. Their job is to get involved in state and local issues, be our interface with local groups, local business aviation associations like the Greater Washington Business Aviation Association that Bob Bluen heads. This is a really important part of the NBAA's effort to promote a great environment for business aviation in the United States. So much work gets done at the state and local level. So much work requires people on the ground. And for us to have people out there working every day, we think is really important for the future of business aviation. So I want to thank Harry and the other regional reps for what they do. And I've got one other person that I want to thank because as I got up here to talk, I noticed that Kathy Perfetti was here today. Kathy is someone that I had an opportunity to work closely with on a number of occasions, but most recently as part of the rewrite of Part 135. And for any of you who've had an opportunity to work with Kathy, you recognize that she is very thoughtful and very fair and very effective. And I think that it's been a tremendous relationship that NBAA has long had with the FAA, but that relationship is built on a lot of respect that we have for the FAA, and nobody embodies that more than Kathy. So Kathy, thanks for being here, and thanks for all you do for us. What I'd like to do today is talk about a specific subject. It probably comes as no surprise to you, but I want to talk about the user fee issue. And the issue that I believe is the most significant challenge to the future of business aviation in the United States. Now, if you've been following NBAA literature, if you've heard me talk over the year and a half that I've been at NBAA, you've probably heard me talk a lot about user fees and this potential challenge. And as I've talked, it's been interesting to get some reactions from the community. It's been a little frustrating for my part because a lot of people have said, well, we don't think it's really going to happen. You know, a lot of times in Washington, you guys make big deals, and a lot of stuff doesn't really get done in Washington, so we're not that worried about it. Well, last week, an article appeared in the Wall Street Journal. A week before that, an article appeared in Business Week. This is clearly getting outside of Washington, D.C. The situation is becoming one that is a major focus for the airlines. We're now seeing CEOs of the airlines going to places like Chicago or coming to Washington, specifically talking about their desire to move to a user fee system. So for those of you who thought maybe this is just an inside Washington deal, a lot of smoke, no real fire, there's a real fire. Our community is very much under attack. We're under attack from the commercial airlines who have really two goals. One, they want to shift, according to them, $2 billion in taxes from the commercial airlines to the business aviation community. They would like our tax burden to go up 5 or 6 fold. Their other goal, and it's now becoming a lot more clear, and it was covered in the Wall Street Journal article and the Business Week article, is they would like to see our access to airspace being reduced. This is a particular frustration for us because we believe that business aviation is complementary to commercial airlines. Time and time again, we talk to people that say, yeah, I used my business aircraft and I was able to get and open up a market, seal a deal, get business started. And now we've got a lot of people going out on the commercial airlines every day. We think that we have a complementary service to commercial airlines. Unfortunately, they see us as competitors, not complementary. And so their feeling is if we can eliminate a lot of business aviation, make it unaffordable, then we're going to pick up, the airlines are going to pick up more traffic. I don't think that's right, but that's where they are. And so that's the goal that they have. Now, I mentioned that a lot of people didn't think it was real. One of the reasons that they don't think it was real is a lot of people remember that we had a user fee fight back in 1997. People talk about, oh yeah, I remember that. All the trade press covered it all the time. User fee. They said, I didn't do anything back then, and it worked out just fine. So I don't think I have to do anything this time around. The fact of the matter is, it's different this time around. It's significantly different this time around. And the reason it is because what happened in 1997 was you had a number of what we then called major airlines, we now call them legacy airlines. But it was American, United, Northwest, Delta. And they decided that they wanted to put Southwest Airlines out of business. And they noticed that they were charging $400 as an average on a ticket. There was a 10% ticket tax at the time. That meant their customers were paying $40 on their flight. Southwest, conversely, was flying around for $39, which meant their customers were paying a tax of $3.90. So the air carriers at that time said, let's do this, let's go after Southwest. If we could get that to be a flat per passenger tax, $25 or $30, well, we'll reduce our tax burden. We may be able to raise our prices and fill in that extra $10, put it in our pocket. But more importantly, we'll take that $39 flight from Southwest Airlines and suddenly it'll become a $69 flight. And they're going to lose a lot of traffic. Their business model might not work. We might be able to put Southwest out of business. And so what you saw back in 1997 was not a fight that involved general aviation. It was a fight that involved major airlines going after Southwest and other low-cost carriers. And those two giants fought. Southwest Airlines spent over $5 million. Their CEO was personally involved. Their entire company was personally involved. They got their customers personally involved. And what did they do? They fought to a draw. They fought to a draw. Both sides got badly hurt. There was a change in the way the commercial airline ticket tax worked. It went from being a 10% to 7.5 cents and a segment fee, $3.20 per passenger. So in some ways, the majors won. But Southwest also inflicted a lot of damage on the majors because Southwest, which doesn't fly internationally, pointed out that the majors were not paying an international departure tax. Well, Congress decided to do that. And so the airlines went after each other and they ended up with a multi-billion dollar tax increase. Two very powerful parts of our community, major carriers and low-cost carriers, went after each other with their combined strength, and that was the result. What's different this time? This time, those majors and Southwest and all the low-cost carriers have come together. They are now unified. Southwest has said, you know what, we're starting to fly a lot more similarly to those major carriers. We're now flying a lot more long-haul flights. And those carriers are bringing down their ticket prices, so they're saying we're not so different from Southwest. So those two groups have now come together, and they're unified, and they're coming after us. This time, they're coming after us. So this time, we're facing a challenge we've never faced before. So the question is, are we going to get run over by it, or are we going to give the kind of response we've never given before? I would like to think that we will, as a community, respond. Now, you ought to know what's in the playbook of the major airlines and the low-cost airlines as they come after business aviation. What they are trying to do, their premise for changing the current tax situation, is to try to say that the current tax situation is not fair, that the commercial airlines are effectively subsidizing business aviation. And the way they're doing that is they're trying to say that the amount of money you put into the airport and airways trust fund ought to be based on your activity level. What the airlines are saying is that the airlines represent about 65% of the IFR flights in the United States, but they pay about 90% of the revenues into the trust fund. Therefore, they're saying there's an imbalance. They're paying too much. You should only pay for the amount of activity. And they come up with a slogan for that. It's called a blip is a blip. What the airlines are saying is that all airplanes, regardless of their size, whether they have 30 or 300 passengers on board, ought to pay the same. Because according to the airline, the controller looking at a screen just handles blips. And a blip doesn't know how many passengers are aboard or the size or weight of the aircraft. So let's just have one fee on the blip. Let's treat all airplanes the same. And for those who don't know a lot about economics or aviation, there's some attractiveness to that idea, that a blip is a blip. Those of us who have been around a little longer know that the idea that a blip is a blip has been rejected, thoroughly rejected by every country in the world that has looked at user fees. Now, user fees are commonplace around the world, but everywhere they're based on the weight and distance of an aircraft. Nowhere do they follow the ACA proposal of making it on takeoff and time and system. What the airlines are trying to do is completely outside of the mainstream of user fees and outside the mainstream of economics. And the reason I say it's outside the mainstream of economics is because generally what happens when you have a cost recovery type program is that you will look, an economist will look and say, well, who's driving the cost of the system? Where are these costs coming from? And one of the things that we learned in the 1997 battle, from studies that were done by the Department of Transportation back then, studies that were done by the General Accountability Office, even some of the comments that were made by the low-cost carriers, suggested that what drives the cost of the FAA is not all the blips in the system. It's all the blips that get congested in a short period of time at our major airports during the peak hours, when the hubs come in, the banks come in, and the banks go out. Congestion is what drives costs. If American Airlines wants to take 50 airplanes and put them into a single airspace in a 15-minute window, you better have a lot of controllers. You better have a lot of trace time. You better have a lot of radar coverage. That's what's driving the cost. You look at Chicago O'Hare. If there were no general aviation activity at Chicago O'Hare, you would still have all of that infrastructure there to handle the airplanes coming in and going out of Chicago O'Hare. It's all there. That's what's driving the cost of the system. If you grounded general aviation across the country tomorrow, you would not see the cost of our air transportation system come down appreciably. And we know that. Look at here in the Washington area. Look at Reagan National Airport. Business aviation was banned from the airport for over 4 years. How much did the cost associated with running Washington Reagan National Airport go down? Not at all. That's because our system, its cost, its operating model is all dictated by the commercial airlines and their hub and spoke operating system. A blip is not a blip. The airlines are driving costs by putting a lot of airplanes into the same place in a short period of time. What they would like to do then is to bill everybody out at the same level. This is a lot like when you go to a restaurant with someone and they order the most expensive stuff on the menu, and then they want to tell you, let's just split the check evenly on a per basis. Right. You know how that works. This is what we are up against. The idea that a blip is a blip. We'll end up charging an A380 with 550 passengers the same amount as a Malibu Meridian with two people on board. There is no way that that is good for business aviation in the United States. And it will end up pushing a lot of people out of the business. And I also want to point out, because a lot of people have said, well, what if they could come up with a fee? What if they could come up with a fee that actually doesn't hurt us so bad financially? In that case, would we be okay with it? Maybe there's a formula there. There's a couple realities that people need to understand about fees. One is there's an administrative burden to it. It's one thing for a commercial airline that's in the business of transportation for hire and compensation to have a full-time person that does nothing but works on fees. It's another thing for a company that sells widgets in rural Virginia to try to have someone get fees and try to go through. You've got to get a purchase order for it. It's got to go in the system. There's got to be a way to pay it. In Canada, they've got fee systems. In other places, they have fee systems. So what's the effect? Well, the International Air Transport Association, in testimony before the International Civil Aviation Organization in Montreal, said it costs international airlines between $85 and $125 to process each invoice. That's not the cost of the invoice, that's the processing charge. So if you are looking, let's assume we're not quite as efficient as the airline. Let's say it costs us $150 to process a fee. That's an extra $150 per flight that doesn't go into the airport and airways trust fund. It just is part of the administrative burden. It's a hidden tax, a hidden administrative tax. So even if on a dollar-to-dollar basis someone could magically come up with a fee system that looks like it holds us harmless, you've got to ask yourself, how does that tax get paid? It's paid with a heavy administrative burden. And we discussed that first. The other point that I want to make about fees, one of the arguments the airlines are making for fees, is guess what? Maybe these fees can be overseen, administered by a private group. Maybe we can get Congress out of this mess. See, it's kind of difficult every year. We go up to Congress, they always tight budgets. Maybe it would be better if we had a fee system that was operated by someone else. Well, you know what happens there? What we see in Canada. Canada, the fees have gone up four times in the past 5 years. You have a group of people responsible for fees who don't have to look you in the eye and say, I need your vote. I need your vote every 2 or 6 years. You get a bunch of people that you have really no accountability for. And they tend to raise the fees faster. So we don't like user fees. We don't like them because they're an administrative burden. We don't like them because they're outside of government and they can go up quickly. We don't like them because we know the purpose that we're getting at is really to put us at a competitive disadvantage with the commercial airlines. Now you'll hear the FAA, commercial airlines, and others talking about, well, what we need user fees is none of that stuff. We just need it because we need a stable and predictable funding stream. If you go back and look at the FAA's funding for the past 10 years, you will see that the FAA's funding for the past 10 years has remained stable or gone up every single year. It went up despite the tech bubble bursting, went up despite tariffs attacks on American soil, went up despite us going into Afghanistan and Iraq, went up despite a SARS scare, terrorized a lot of international travel. It has gone up each and every year. How House Appropriations Committee has just marked up its bill for next year. Guess what? It's going to go up again. There are a few things that have been as stable and predictable over the past 10 years as the FAA's funding. The privatized groups around the world, what's happened to them? Well, NAV Canada had to raise its rates 10% immediately following 9/11 when the rest of the aviation industry was saying, we're on our back, we can't afford it. NAV Canada said, well, that feels a pain, but we're doing it anyway, it's for our good. The UK, what they did is they basically went back to the government. They wanted to be privatized, stand on their own, enjoy all the profits. When they got in trouble, they went back to the government and asked for a $2 billion bailout. We have a system today that has given the United States the largest, most sophisticated, most diverse, most efficient, and the safest air transportation system anywhere in the world. I don't think we need to give up on that model lightly. The fuel taxes that we pay are enormously efficient. That money goes from our pockets directly into the Airport and Airways Trust Fund, and it doesn't take a lot of accountants, bill collectors, billing agents, and other things to collect that. So from the government's point of view, it's enormously efficient. From our point of view, it's enormously easy to understand. There's no record keeping. There's no processing those invoices. It is efficient. And I would argue from a good government standpoint, it's a pretty good policy. The more you fly, the more fuel you burn. So it does a good job of approximating your use of the system. Really kind of a progressive tax. Generally, the more money you have, the bigger airplane to fly, the more sophisticated the airplane, the more fuel it burns. It also provides some incentive out there to constantly look for cleaner, quieter, more fuel-efficient type vehicles. So we think we've got in the fuel tax a very good vehicle. We think that this is a system that has worked well for business aviation, for all the general aviation, for over 35 years. We want to keep the fuel tax. We want to defeat user fees. I would also say that we want to modernize the system. A lot of what the airlines have tried to say is, well, this is about modernization. And, you know, business aviation doesn't want to pay more. They must not want to be part of modernization. That is flat out wrong, and I'll tell you why that's wrong. One of the things that we have done is we have been actively involved in working every modernization program that there is in Washington, D.C. or anywhere else. We currently are in every one of the next generation air transportation system subcommittees trying to develop the future air traffic system in the United States. We recognize that there are going to be equipage costs on that. We're prepared to pay those equipage costs. If you look at what happened, a year and a half ago, we doubled the en route airspace with RBSM between flight levels 290 and 390. We did that because we felt ultimately that was in the best interest of moving our nation's air system capacity and keeping our air transportation system ready for the future. We have a track record of being at the forefront of modernizing our air transportation system. We recognize how important it is to the community, and we are willing to be at the forefront of that. Now let me say, a lot of people say, well, it sounds like an important issue, sounds like a big issue. NBAA, good luck. We're with you. We hope you succeed. One of my messages to the community is NBAA, with its total of 65 employees in Washington, D.C., two of whom are full-time on government affairs, is not going to win this battle by itself. NBA represents the business aviation community. We recognize the leadership role that you expect from us. We recognize that we need to be on Capitol Hill every day. We need to understand what the issues are. We need to frame the debate. We need to get the community informed. But the reality is, what motivates Congress is not one of the 4,000 associations in Washington, D.C., knocking on their door every day telling them this is important. What motivates Capitol Hill is when they feel the grassroots of an issue coming up in their district, when they get phone calls from home, when they hear about things at town hall meetings, when their mail boxes become full. That's when they start to pay attention. They say, this matters to the voters in my district, the people that are going to decide on my future. I better understand it, and I better get involved. So part of what we've been about at NDAA over the past year and a half is trying to let people know not just that there's a major issue out there that can affect you, but how you can affect that issue, how you can get involved. One of the primary things we did about a year ago was we invested heavily into new software technology to make it easy for everybody to write, email their two senators and their congressmen. We call it Contact Congress. This is on the NDAA homepage. You can go to our homepage. This will be in the upper right-hand corner. If you click on this, a field will come down and it'll ask you for your name and your address. If you want to, you can put in the company you work for. You don't have to. But once it knows your address, it will immediately identify for you and link you directly to the emails of your two senators and your congressman. Now you can write them easily and quickly. And we've gone beyond that. We've developed form letters that you can use. You can modify them if you want, or you can send them just as they are. But that will then go at the click of a button to your member of Congress. I've had some people say to me, well, those are just form letters. They don't count, do they? And I can tell you that I've worked on Capitol Hill. And the way Capitol Hill works is usually once a week. When I was with Senator Kassebaum, it was on Monday morning. Everybody sits down. And the senator says, what's hot? What are we getting mail on? What are the numbers? Numbers matter. If you suddenly are getting 75 emails, 15 emails where you never got them before, you raise your hand and say, well, we're starting to get a lot of questions about this. And what the representative says is, well, I don't want to be caught blind on it. I need to know more. What are people saying? Those types of campaigns do indeed work. Numbers matter. Now, a lot of people don't want to acknowledge that. They'd like to say it's somebody else. See, it may be that CEO has to talk to someone. So we'll just sit back and wait for the CEO to take care of it. Well, it's your job that's at risk. It's our industry that's at risk. I don't think we can wait for somebody else to do that. I will also say that what moves Congress is not just CEOs, it's individuals. And you know that. You know that. If I asked you right now to name one or two of the most powerful associations that you can possibly think of, I suspect some of you will say AARP, some of you will say NRA. I would probably tend to agree with you. Those two associations are not CEO driven. I didn't say the business roundtable. I think it's really the individual groups. They're motivated, they're focused, they vote in large numbers, they make their size and their significance felt. They weigh in on issues. We're going to win this fight. That's what this community needs to do. And I recognize that we haven't done that before. One of the things that's part of the business aviation DNA is discretion. We've learned how to be very discreet operators. Don't make a big deal about the airplane. To operate quietly, no one knows you're there. Well, guess what? They know we're here. We've got a bullseye right on our forehead. They're coming after us. So the idea that we're just going to be discreet and not get noticed is out the window. We're on the front page of major newspapers. This is a big deal. In order for us to win, we've got to get motivated. You've got to get involved. You've got to get your friends involved. You've got to get your coworkers involved, your customers. Everybody's got to get involved. And normally when I close on one of my opportunities to make a presentation, I close by saying, please, 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 go to the website, contact Congress, get involved. Today, I think the urgency goes a little bit beyond me saying please. What I'd like to do now is ask for a commitment. I'd like everybody to raise their hand if they are willing to commit to go contact Congress and get three of their coworkers, their friends, their customers involved. Can I get a commitment from people to go to the website? I'm taking that as a commitment. I'm looking out here and I'm seeing about 100 people with their hands in the air. That's 300 contacts. If you go 400 contacts, you go get three other people. Now we've got terminals here, two terminals, to let you do that. So you can do it while you're here. If not, I'm going to trust you to follow through on your commitment and thank everybody for helping us try to shape the destiny of business aviation together. Thank you very much.